Morning, Nashua. Good morning, New England, and welcome to AutoLine here on News Talk 900 WMVU. My name's John Paul. The name of the program is AutoLine, and Dave Juvet, co-host. And why there's a difference between all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive, and why all-wheel drive is probably the choice for most people in New England versus four-wheel drive. A lot of people say, like, people who have lived in Arizona and moved to New Hampshire make a mistake of buying a...
I'll say they make a mistake.
of buying a sport utility vehicle and find out that actually when you're driving around a two-wheel drive, it only becomes a rear-wheel drive vehicle and not necessarily something that's all that helpful for day-to-day driving.
I'd say that was the least of their mistakes.
Why don't we say good morning to Alex and see what's up? Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Just beautiful morning down here in Philadelphia.
Is that where you are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Brad likes Philadelphia, so do I. You've been to Philadelphia?
No.
John? Oh, it's a wonderful city.
Is it?
It's a great city.
I've never gotten quite out to that part.
Philadelphia is not a state, Brad. He's going to a great state. It's a city.
You should come down. It's wonderful here.
All right. Well, keep a room open for me. And
you got it.
Hey, those Eagles are having a pretty good season so far, too, huh?
We keep our fingers and toes crossed down here. We should win tomorrow, but we'll see.
Big game.
My co-host was this person I was talking about that made the mistake of buying this sport utility vehicle when he moved from Arizona to New Hampshire. Let's talk about all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive.
Sure. Basically, a lot of people think that there is no difference, and we like to look at the fact that four-wheel drive is a geared system. So that when you're going, it's utilized only on a slippery road so that you can make the turn. Literally, the front drive shaft and the rear drive shaft are forced to turn at the same speed. Now, that's all well and good when you're going straight down a road.
Right.
But when you have to make a turn, the wheels have to turn at different rates, and a four-wheel drive system does not allow that to happen.
Yeah, and that's something we see. And the other part of it is, that, like in Boston, for instance, you see an awful lot of sport utility vehicles. And they're driving in, you know, maybe just a little bit of snow or a little bit of slush, and they're in two-wheel drive, and because they're all of a sudden rear-wheel drive vehicles, they're just not so, you know, they got to stop and engage the four-wheel drive mechanism, and that's fine if you're just pulling away from a stoplight or a driveway, but if you're going into a turn, having the ability of having that all-wheel drive on all the time seems to be the advantage, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the beauty of the all-wheel drive system is that you don't have to do anything. It's already there. It's already engaged. It's designed to allow a difference to occur in rotational speed from the front drive shaft to the back drive shaft, and all the driver needs to do is drive the car. The all-wheel drive system will take care of the rest.
I think one thing people who you know, all-wheel drive systems have been advertised for a number of years, and people may be somewhat familiar with them, but I think someone who's never driven an all-wheel drive car, one thing they might worry about is, for those people who are non-mechanics, about the worst thing that they could ever have happen to their car is to have transmission problems. It, like, scares the bejesus out of you because you know, you know it's going to be expensive. You know, it always seems like you can never quite identify what the problem is, And after you get it fixed, you always seem to continue to have transmission problems. So I think a lot of people who are unfamiliar with all-wheel drive may wonder if they may just be doubling their chances for transmission trouble.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, actually, I used to be a mechanic. Mechanics don't like transmission jobs either. But, you know, the Subaru system requires no additional maintenance than a normal transmission would because the all-wheel drive mechanicals are actually located inside the transmission. Its physical size is about, if you were to take three tennis balls and, like, hold them in your hand, that's the size of our all-wheel drive units. Whereas on a typical sports utility vehicle, they use another transmission size component called a transfer case.
Big, heavy thing. I've taken one too many out.
Yeah, and me
big,
too.
Bigger than three tennis balls.
Bigger
huh?
than three tennis balls, yes.
A lot bigger. And requires its own maintenance schedule. And in a Subaru, there's no additional maintenance required because of the size of our unit, because of the efficiency of our unit. And I might add that our all-wheel drive Subaru gets better gas mileage than a front-wheel drive Toyota Camry or Honda Accord. also the fuel mileage penalty for us is dramatically reduced too.
Let's talk about the 95 Legacy. All-wheel drive vehicle, pretty well equipped. I drive by a billboard on the Southeast Expressway in Boston all the time. $15,995?
Isn't that something? You can buy an all-wheel drive Legacy wagon, we call it the Brighton, for $15,999, and we're giving you that.
$4 off.
I'm sorry?
I was $4 off.
And you can buy that cheaper than a front-wheel drive Legacy. I mean, we're really taking a proactive position on all-wheel drive this year so that we've lowered the price from 94 prices by about $600.
Can we run through the full Subaru lineup just to give people an idea of what models are out there and maybe what the distinguishing features are from
sure.
them?
Start off with the Impreza. Impreza was introduced in 93. New for 1995 with the Subaru Impreza is the two-door coupe, as well as a 2.2-liter engine, the same engine you can buy in Legacy. So now, all of a sudden, Impreza has 135 horsepower. And it's available in the coupe, the sedan, or what we call the sport wagon, kind of like a hatchback-looking model. And Impreza, as well as all Subaru vehicles, are available with all-wheel drive. So that is our fun car, if you will, and that an all-wheel drive vehicle can be a fun vehicle to own also. Then Legacy, first introduced in, as a 1990. This is a second-generation Legacy. It is a bigger car. It's 2 inches longer wheelbase, 2 inches longer overall, about an inch wider and 2 inches taller, and about 150 pounds lighter, yet it is structurally stronger than the previous Legacy.
I've got bigger, but I haven't got lighter.
I'll vouch for that.
I've gotten bigger, too, and definitely not lighter. So we basically used some Cray computers to just rethink the platform on Legacy. And it's a bigger, better, lighter, and with the $15,999 version, cheaper than it's been before. Legacy is available in sedan and wagon. And I might add that in the Legacy line, as well as the Impreza line, we're offering a package that we call the Outback. And the Outback package...
Which I have a publicity photo of in my hand, even as we speak.
Great. Well, you can see that it's got two-tone paint and projector beam headlamps.
It's a beautiful, beautiful-looking wagon.
Thank you. And, you know, it is our answer to the sport utility vehicle. For those people who really don't want a sport utility vehicle but want some of the utility that those cars or vehicles provide, yet don't want the inconvenience of a sport utility, you know, the step up and trying to load things in and the fact that almost all sport utility vehicles start life as a truck. I like to say that the Legacy Outback wagon can do about 95% of what a sport utility vehicle is used for. But when it comes time to live with the vehicle every day, we're a much easier vehicle to live with.
Hey, Alex, can you hold on for just a minute?
Sure.
I've got two or three other questions I'd like to run by you, but we do need to take care of station business here.
Understand.
Okay, you're listening to Autoline on WMVU News Talk 900.
You're never out of reach with a cellular phone from U.S. Cellular of Bedford and Nashua. The widest coverage in the Northeast is what you receive with your cellular phone from U.S. Cellular. Safety, business connections, always in touch with one of the superior rate plans from U.S. Cellular. And now U.S. Cellular has the widest choice of phones. And if you haven't looked at cellular phones lately, the things they'll do will amaze you. U.S. Cellular also has call delivery available all across the country with Roaming America, and direct call delivery is available in many areas. Check their toll-free dialing plans, too. Call now for a no-obligation demonstration in Bedford and in Nashua at 1-800-234-USCC. That's 1-800-234-USCC. United States Cellular installs and services with their experienced service staff, and your new phone will be in operation in just an hour or so. United States Cellular Mobile Phone Network. Put it to work for you and your family and your business. 1-800-234-USCC.
Hi, everyone. It's Bonnie from Milford Ford, here to tell you that you can save lots of money on the 94 or 95 Ford Taurus. How, you ask? Well, between now and the end of October, Ford Motor Company is offering 2.9% financing up to 48 months on all new Ford Tauruses, sedans, wagons, or SHOs. So here's your chance to get into the number one selling vehicle in America and save lots of money, too. In case you want to pay cash for the vehicle, Ford hasn't forgotten you. They offer $500 cash rebate, so even the cash buyer saves. So come into Milford Ford today and drive away a great deal on a 94 or 95 Ford Taurus at 2.9% financing up to 48 months till the end of October, or opt for the $500 rebate. But you'd better do it fast. We're selling them faster than we can get them. At Milford Ford, Route 13 North Milford. At 673-1700. That's 673-1700.
Beep, 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 yeah! Beep, 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 yeah.
Well, we have to we have to thank our musical director for that little bit of intro music.
Alex, getting back to these Subarus and the Outback and legacy models and so on. You know, it's so hard to tell nowadays where cars are manufactured, whether when you're buying a what you might have thought was an import, it could have been built in Tennessee. If you're buying a Ford, it might have been built in Mexico. Where are Subarus manufactured?
The Subaru Legacy are manufactured by Hoosiers in Lafayette, Indiana.
Indiana.
Yeah.
What is a Hoosier exactly?
No one's been able to answer that.
I thought a Hoosier was some kind of like wooden cabinet that, was, that you have in a kitchen. It is, actually.
I don't know, but they build great cars.
They do.
They play pretty good basketball, too.
Yeah.
What about the other cars in the Subaru lineup?
Well, the other car that we have available for sale is the exciting SVX.
You know, I see one. I see those everything. Yeah. The SVX, this will show my incredible depth of knowledge on automobile issues. My wife and I were driving around Boston just off of Newberry Street one night, and an SVX drove up next to us, and I had no idea what it was.
Well, I'm pretty impressed with that, Dave.
it's an excellent, sporty-looking car that certainly caught our attention. I just had never seen one before.
Yeah, you know, it's taken a while for that car to catch on, but the sales are really picking up really well. And it's our flagship car for us. It shows and demonstrates that all-wheel drive can be a lot of fun, that it offers a lot as far as a high-performance car is concerned, because the vehicle has 230 horsepower.
It goes quite fast.
Yeah, and then it's also, I like to look at it as a grand touring car in the classic sense of what that used to mean. It's a great highway car, and it's a very comfortable car. It's the kind of car you just want to get in and drive cross-country, and you don't care what the weather's going to give you.
Now, what kind of appointments does it come with? Is it on the inside? It's got nice, comfortable seats, and it's not. I mean, what's the ride like? Is it a pretty comfortable driving car?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's really uses our patented suspension design. The interesting thing about a Subaru flagship car, you know, the SVX, as opposed to another manufacturer's flagship car, is we took off the shelf technology that we are using in the Impreza, that we're using in the Legacy, and we put it in this beautiful package and beefed it up a little bit to handle the horsepower. So it's basically the same all-wheel drive system, the same suspension system and philosophy that you can buy even on our cheapest cars. And I think that speaks a lot for our engineering.
Now, that's a car that, you know, I want to see one of those up here in the wintertime, just because it'd be kind of neat to talk about a sports car that you're driving around in a foot of snow.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we all read sports car reviews and things, and, you know, the first thing that happens is somebody takes one out in the snow, and they, you know, it becomes an e-ticket ride somewhere because they spend all their time. I'm dating myself. There's still e-ticket rides at Disney World.
You're living in the past, John.
But, you know, all of a sudden you take out, you know, something like even a Corvette with traction control isn't a terrific car in the wintertime in 6 or 8 inches of snow.
Yeah.
But the idea of an SVX all-wheel drive, I'm sure it's a sports car you can drive and not have to worry about the weather so much.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And, you know, I sat down and had a talk with an engineer a few weeks ago, and he introduced me to a little bit of a different way of looking at all-wheel drives. That kind of is an interesting thing I'd like to share with you. If you look at the horsepower, he looks at it from the horsepower potential per drive wheel. Two-wheel drive car, 200 horsepower car, there's 100 horsepower potential per wheel. But in a four-wheel drive or an all-wheel drive car, that horsepower potential is divided by four. So now you have 50 horsepower potential per wheel. What that means is as the road gets slippier, the more horsepower potential you have, the more opportunity you have for slip. The less horsepower potential per wheel you have, the less opportunity for slip. And I never looked at it that way, and it's a very interesting concept for me.
And it's something that's also pretty easily – I've never thought of it that way either, but that's a pretty easy way to explain it to somebody too.
Yeah, you know, and all-wheel drive can be very difficult to explain.
Not that I was implying that I need the most basic of ways to explain things. But you
were wise to do it that way, Alex.
There's an advertising slogan that explains all-wheel drive. What is that?
From the wheels that slip to the wheels that grip. And we worked on that one for a long time. And I got to admit, the first time I saw that, I said, I'm not so sure. But it's really accurate. What happens in our all-wheel drive systems is that it senses, through some monitoring systems we have, wheels that are slipping, and automatically transfers the power away from those wheels, and assuming that it assumes that the other set of wheels has the better traction, and it transfers power to there, so you can just keep going.
Makes sense. The poor little Subaru Justy went away last year. Is there any plans down the road that there'll be a new subcompact coming out?
Not for this market. I mean, we're known internationally everywhere except for the United States as a small car manufacturer,
right.
And you know, we're a small company relative to like a Honda or Toyota or Ford. And there's not a lot of profit in a small car like that for us, so I don't think you'll see one again.
The Justy with the, what was it, CVT transmission?
Yeah.
It was a neat little car to drive, though.
Very interesting vehicle. I probably should admit this, but I didn't really like the way the transmission felt. But from what I understand, and I don't have a lot of snowmobile experience, that it performed very similar to like a snowmobile engine, whereas the engine speed went up to a set RPM and stayed there, and the transmission just kept compensating its ratio to keep it always in the optimum power curve. Very efficient system. You know, it was the only automatic transmission available in the United States that got better gas mileage than a manual transmission-equipped vehicle.
Huh. Well, is that transmission available in Japan still? Or?
Yeah, still available in Japan. We're building it under license for other manufacturers. It had a rub of having a horsepower limitation of 200 horsepower or less. It doesn't look like horsepower is a problem anymore for a transmission. I have a feeling that, you know, within a few years, you'll see other manufacturers adopting the CVT, and it may even come back to Subaru.
Yeah. Now, who's Subaru's parent?
Fuji Heavy Industries.
And they're huge, right?
They're huge. We're not the film people, however.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have a blimp. And but we're huge. I mean, we're most known for our aerospace engineering. We built some parts on the Boeing 767. Also our rolling stock trucks and shipbuilding.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's big. Big company. And Subaru sell pretty well here up in New England, too, don't they?
Oh, boy. It's our number one market in the United States by far, you know, which is odd for a Japanese manufacturer because most Japanese do better in California, one of our worst markets. And, you know, a lot of things is we've always been an all-wheel drive company, and it's almost a no-brainer association to go to a Subaru if you're looking for an all-wheel drive car in the New England area.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense to me, and it sounds like a car. I saw an interesting statistic, and I don't know how accurate this was, but I saw a number of, and I think it was Legacy sold, and it showed like 7% were right-hand drive sold in the United States, or 8% or something, and sold to the Postal Service.
Isn't that something? It's a great thing we hit on a few years ago that the rural letter carriers in the United States we're using left-hand drive vehicles with all kinds of Rube Goldberg-type contractions to be able to drive it from the right-hand side. And we said, well, wait a minute here. We have a better solution. And so we started manufacturing our right-hand drive vehicles and put together a postal package, which includes some nice amenities like power windows and nice stereo systems, and, of course, all-wheel drive. And it has taken off like wildfire.
Yeah, that's when I saw the number, I was like, wait a minute, that's got to be wrong. And, and I looked a little bit more, and sure enough, it was that was an accurate number.
Yeah, it's a terrific thing. They're a very, very loyal group, and the feedback has been outstanding.
Well, that's, and the other group that I heard you talk about when we met a couple of weeks ago, but since then I talked to a group of 250 visiting nurses, mm-hmm. and I want to say probably of that 250, 50 had Subarus.
Wow.
Or at least,
and the other 200 wish they did.
Yeah, well, you know, it's. I said, well, you know, how do you, you know, part of it was I was trying to help them get through winter, and I said, you know, part of it, all-wheel drive. Somebody asked, you know, is four-wheel drive the way to go? And it was right after we met together, and I said, well, how many in this group have all-wheel drive vehicles like a Subaru? And probably, I want to say, it seemed like a quarter of the hands went up in the room.
Yeah,
now, you know, maybe somebody had an Audi Quattro in there, but you know, a lot of people, and I said Subarus, and a lot of people nodded up and down. So that seems like a group that I guess they have to be to work.
Yeah, and, you know, that's something we've discovered, too, through our marketing research, and we're really going into what we call these niche markets, you know, the RN, the doctors, the engineers,
right.
those people who just have to get there. And yet spend a lot of time.
Yeah, radio station personnel that has to be here first thing in the morning. Yeah.
Sure, we have to get you in one too.
and it sounds it sounds like a car. Let's look at the real high end of the Legacy. If I wanted to get a Legacy with everything under ABS brakes, all-wheel drive, obviously leather. Is there a leather package?
Yeah, there sure is.
Okay, let's make this the top of the line Legacy. What would I spend?
Now, the most expensive Legacy you can buy is the loaded LSI wagon, leather interior, CD player, all the bells and whistles. You would be $24,320.
Can't beat that.
Yeah.
Good price. Yeah, you know, we're aggressively, I told you before, we're aggressively packaging the all-wheel drive systems. You can buy a Legacy wagon for $18,820, which gives you, it's our active safety group, which we call all-wheel drive, four-wheel disc brakes, four-channel anti-lock brakes, and cruise control. That's a really strong value.
And how much was it again?
It's $18,820.
And what was the Outback wagon? What's the price range on that?
Right, the Outback wagon is $19,820.
Yeah.
And an interesting feature in the Outback wagon that I failed to tell you guys about was that it's got in the cargo area, you open up the lift gate, on the left-hand panel, there's a little plastic plug which you pull it out, and it's a 12-volt source, just like a little cigarette lighter source back there for a little air compressor or whatever, you know, for camping.
So you can plug in one of those coolers that have become popular now that heat and cool and blow up the air mattress and all that kind of
or
stuff.
Or other inflatable.
So, yeah, the items.
Okay, Dave. Last year for 94, there was a Subaru wagon with an adjustable suspension. Is that still available or not?
No, our air suspension system no longer is available because of the EPA law, not EPA laws, but for the federal standard of bumper height. It used to be that all-wheel drive vehicles were not technically not classified as cars. They were classified as multi-purpose vehicles. But now all of our vehicles are classified as cars, so you have to have a standard ride height.
Right.
So the air suspension went away.
It seemed really neat. It to me, it looked like it maybe bordered a little bit on novelty.
Yeah.
But it looked, I get, you know, I kind of look at techno things sometimes. Wow, that's great, you know. And then afterwards, the idea of having a car for under $20,000, all-wheel drive, ABS brakes, well put together package, wagon especially, it seems like, and I don't know who said it, but it was like, let's look at Subaru's strong points and let's build from it. And all-wheel drive seems to be the thing that Subaru is. Most people relate to Subaru about.
Absolutely. It's what we do best. It's something no one else can do the way we can because of the horizontally opposed engine.
Right.
And therefore, we don't have to put all these other devices to make all-wheel drive happen. We simply just run a drive shaft out the back of the transmission.
Simple enough.
It is.
Well, it sounds like Subaru may be definitely a consideration for a car of New England. And I want to say thank you, Alex, for joining us on the AutoLine program. You're always a gentleman, and nice of you to get up early to join us.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Alex. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good talking to you guys.
Alex Fedorik from Subaru. Nice guy.
Yeah.
I like nice people.
Hey, these Philadelphians, I'm telling you, they're good people.
Is that what it is?
That's right. You should go there sometime.
I should. Well, the closest I've ever been is the Pocono Mountains. Never quite got over the mountains any further.
Well, go over the mountains and through the woods.
I guess. That's probably how you get there, right? 883-9900 is the phone number. If you have a car question, feel free to call. And why don't we take a break? And when we come back, perhaps we can come up with some sort of trivia question. And we're also on a trivia hunt. We need to come up with our trivia well has gone dry.
Well, let's play Stump the Experts. We haven't done that for a while.
Okay, that's a better idea.
If someone has a trivia legitimate
trivia question, give us a call at 883-9900. And if you stump the experts, you will get a pair of tickets to the New England Auto Show.
Ooh.
And that's going to be taking place. Wait a second, we've got to get sound effects queued up. You'll get a pair of tickets to the New England Auto Show. Nothing happened. I just talked over it. Sorry. If you can stump the experts, 883-9900, and we will give you a pair of tickets to the New England Auto Show, which is going to start next Saturday at the Bayside Exposition Center. It's going to run for 10 days. And
with gladiators.
With gladiators and the big Vorian flame-throwing car thing that's out there. You're listening to Autoline on News Talk 900 WMVU. We'll be right back.
As cool as your red top, your favorite hot spot. It's something with hometowns and everyone's class clown. It seems as timeless as pop flies, and you know who. It's always been true. It's always
just for you. A taste you'll find in no other beer at any price. Beechwood aged Budweiser.
This Bud's for you. Yeah, this Bud's for you.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. It's always been true.
There's so much to cherish in life. People we know and care about. Special times when day-to-day problems seem unimportant.
Happy birthday!
Little things that give us joy. The smiles and laughter of young children. The sounds of nature that announce the beginning of a brand new day. The beauty we find around us. The sounds of music. And every day, there are those beginning a whole new lifetime of experiences. People who drive after drinking endanger themselves, their friends, and everyone else on the road. If you drink, do the right thing. Take a cab, call a friend, or choose a designated driver before you drink. No one has a license to drink and drive. This message sponsored by AAA.
Welcome back to Autoline. We're still looking to have someone play Stump the Chumps with us. Yes.
At least it wasn't Stump the Chimps. Yeah.
883-9900. If you have a trivia question we can't answer, we will give you a pair of tickets to the New England International Auto Show starting next Saturday at Bayside Exposition Center down in Boston. Dave, I have something I'd like you to buy me for Christmas this year.
Have you been a good boy?
I've been real good. Here you go. If you wouldn't mind, it's a pretty good deal after all. So
the ultimate race car, only $11,275, ready to race. Is this for when you're out on Route 128?
No.
It's easy. It's affordable. It's exciting. But I don't get it. What's the deal?
What? It's a completely put together race car, and they actually have races where they're all the same kind of car, and they do it down at Charlotte International Speedway.
Oh, it's got the engine and everything.
Got the engine and everything. It's a complete car. No, it's not street legal. You're still thinking there. You're starting to look. I'm trying to look puzzled here.
Well, I'm trying to see what the catch is with it.
There is no catch.
No catch, huh?
It's a little car. It's not a full size car. It's sort of like a 3/4 scale car.
Yeah, but they're kind of cool looking.
They are. They look like old 40s Fords.
Yeah.
And they're and there's actually, if on like TNN and stuff, it's called a legend car, and it was put together by a former race car driver, and I believe they use a motorcycle engine to power them along. They have incredibly high speeds, and they handle really well, and I want you to get me one for Christmas.
Okay, it's yours. I'll get you two. That way you can find a buddy to race with.
There you go. Well, there's a whole bunch of them down there. So
here's something interesting.
Okay.
This is from Auto Week. They have a spy photo of the 1996 Saturn sedan, subtitled, The Second Generation Gets Rounder, which I guess a lot of us are as we age. Saturn's first major...
Are they going to get lighter, though?
Yeah. By the way, John has his own blimp, but... Saturn's first major body restyling since its 1990 introduction is planned for next year. The four-door shows a more rounded body shape and snubbed nose, replacing the sharp lines of its predecessor. The arched form in the greenhouse will be used in the next station wagon, creating symmetry in the glass area and permitting a single rear door and side frame for both types of vehicles, blah, 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 blah. Saturn Coupe will be redesigned for the 1997 model. Now, let me pass this back to you, John, because I want to ask you, they're talking about this being a totally new design and so on, but in my opinion, it doesn't look a lot different from what you can get right now.
I think it does, but I think it's taken a little bit of the, I want to say the rounded Ford Contour styling, that sort of, what they've sort of closed all the windows in the car. They've put an air hose inside of it and pumped it up a little bit, so it's got a little bit more rounded shape.
It does look like the roof might be a little bit higher, anyone who's ever been in a Saturn will appreciate.
And the side maybe looks just a little bit more rounded in the hood and trunk line. Trunk line looks like it drops off a little bit
more.
Sort
of like it's like on Mars and like the additional gravity
is pushing it
down.
Or you know, how someone would look if they were holding their breath. Perhaps.
That ought to give you all an accurate description of what the car looks like. Just think of John holding his breath.
That was a visual that is only here. Were you always interested in buying a Daihatsu?
I was always interested in figuring out how they pronounced it.
Yeah, it's Daihatsu. Daihatsu had the Charade, or Charade, which was a name that didn't do the car a lot. They also had a neat little sport utility vehicle called the Rocky, but apparently Daihatsu is returns, but the Japanese maker isn't bringing its cars back to the United States. Instead, it signed an agreement with Briggs & Stratton to sell 700...
And lawnmowers.
This really puzzles me.
It's a car. No, it's a lawnmower.
Briggs & Stratton to sell 700 to 950cc Japanese engines for lawnmowers. That's one big lawnmower engine. I mean, there's the Geo Metro, for instance, is a 1,000cc engine. Like a 1,000cc engine in a lawnmower? You could mow your lawn in, like probably 8 minutes, right? Fire that sucker up. You could get going about 80 around your yard.
Excellent.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Why don't we talk to Bill from Bill? Bill Brock from the Heritage Plantation Sandwich. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you, John?
Good. How are you doing?
We thought you were calling to stump the experts.
Yeah, we were trying to play stump the chumps here. We have a couple tickets to give away for the New England International Auto Show, and we were looking for a trivia question. And a couple of weeks ago, I asked a trivia question, didn't get an answer to. But I bet you know it. What kind of car did Jack Benny drive?
Maxwell.
Yep. See, you gotta talk to these museum guys because they know all the answers to these old car questions. But yeah, it was a Maxwell, which was a kind of neat car, and I hadn't seen one for a long, long time. And up at Hemmings Motor News, they had a Maxwell sitting in their yard one day, which was in the need of a little bit of restoration.
Well, before we go much further, we ought to tell everyone who this is.
Who this is? I thought I did. It's Bill Brock from the Heritage Plantation Sandwich. You got to start paying attention.
You're talking too fast. Would you have, like 10 cups of coffee
I
this
did,
morning?
Actually.
You guys.
Golly. Yeah. Slow down?
Okay, we'll slow down. We'll
We're
take
here
a breath.
For an hour. Yeah.
We'll take a breath. Bill Brock is the Auto Museum Curator at the Heritage Plantation in Sandwich, Massachusetts. Is that right?
That is correct.
That is correct. And what can people, and how long, well, let's start, how long is the Heritage Plantation open for? When's the closing date?
It was last Sunday,
the
23rd of October.
Okay.
Yeah. We open on Mother's Day Sunday every year.
Yep.
And we close around the end of the third week in October, which is usually a Sunday.
Hmm.
And we are open to certain functions going on, like basket classes or lectures. And I'm calling kind of in reference to the Melbourne lecture that's coming up on November 16th.
Yeah, what's that going to be about?
Well, first of all, Bob Melbourne was the curator of the Auto Museum from 1978 to 1988. And he did a lot of fine things for Heritage. He wrote or came up with a book called The Automobile Collection, which has photographs and a little bit of history about each car in the collection. And it was a great success. And Bob retired in 1988. And unfortunately, we lost Bob last Thursday.
Oh.
He had cancer But his wife, Kay Melber, and his sister, Joan Warburg, put up funds for, set up like an endowment fund.
Yep.
So that each year we could get a noted speaker to talk about cars and the history of cars or whatever, or the future of cars.
And so who's your noted speaker going to be?
Somebody by the name of John Paul, known as the Car Doctor.
Yeah, well,
I hate to tell you, you're damaging your credibility a little bit.
No, I don't think so.
No,
at all.
I'm just kidding.
I don't think
we,
so at all.
We all know and love John.
We're looking forward to it, and we just want to get some news of this out, not only in the newspaper but over the air, which you gentlemen are allowing me to do.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, can you tell us a little bit more about the Heritage Museum? When did it start? How did it
Surely.
Come about?
Well, the Heritage was the creation of a gentleman by the name of Josiah K. Lilly III from the pharmaceutical family, Eli Lilly.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Lilly and his wife were out in California back in 1964, and they saw a motorcade of antique automobiles, and the people were dressed in the costume of the day of the cars, and he was just fascinated by it, and it got him going on putting a collection together. So he had some assistance from a gentleman who became the first curator of the Antique Car Museum. His name was Carl Erickson.
And about when was this?
This was in back, we opened up Heritage in 1969.
Uh-huh.
So we just finished celebrating our 25th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Lilly wanted to relate to the first third of the century in automobile history. And he chose cars that would do things like that, like the Oldsmobile being one of the first cars, Stevens Duryea, the real first car that was put into production in this country. We have a curb dash Oldsmobile. That car was famous for making across the country trip from San Francisco to New York, and it took 74 days, actually 54 traveling days, and they drove 5,400 miles. Now, we all know that it's not that far across the country, but they got lost, they had a back crack, you know, and they covered a lot of miles.
And what year was that?
1903.
Well, that was the first year AAA was founded, wasn't it?
No, 1902.
Where the hell was their map?
Well, this was it. They would ask directions, and they followed riverbeds, railroad tracks, this type of thing. You know,
covered wagons.
Yeah, and it, as I say, it took them 54 days to go 5,400 miles, so they averaged about 100 miles a day.
Yeah, that's a
they
pretty.
They averaged about 18 miles to a gallon of gas.
That's a pretty brave thing to do when you think about it, because you got to figure there's no gas stations, there's no road service, there's no.
They had to get their gas from hardware stores in 5-gallon cans.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I guess you would have to plan your trip to know where the next. They probably didn't have True Value hardware stores in 1903, but
not really.
To be able to plan that out. As John White from the Boston Globe has said, your exhibit is like going into a church down there in the round barn. It's a reproduction Shaker barn, and the cars and the barn are absolutely beautiful.
Yes, it's a beautiful way to display the cars. As you're saying, the Shaker barn is, reproduction barn, is in the form of a circle, and the cars are on the outside perimeter on both levels, the top and the second level. And as Mr. Lilly said, it reminded him of spokes in a wheel, the way the cars are displayed.
And it does. It does. And, you know, for people next spring to go down to the barn, or go down to the whole Heritage Plantation and see the beautiful grounds, the military museum that's down there. You can definitely spend, if you bring either eat your food or bring a picnic lunch, you can spend the whole day down there.
Yes, you could.
And
Sandwich
is a lovely place to visit.
Lovely
such
area.
A nice
There's
town.
So much going on in Sandwich, and so many museums that are there, and time really to come. In the spring is the last week in May or the first week in June, when our 76 acres of land, which is covered with rhododendrons and azaleas, are out in full blossom. And it's just a spectacular sight.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, it really is. And, of course, our grounds are beautifully manicured. And it's just a lovely place to come to.
Well, you know what, Bill? I think what something else we're going to do is next springtime around Mother's Day, when you're getting ready to open up, perhaps we can have you back on just as a reminder for people to go down there, because it sounds like a great spot to visit.
I have a better idea. How about next year around that time, we take the radio program down there?
Ooh.
Oh, that'd be great. That would be great.
That would be fun.
Right off the plantation.
That might
John,
be fun.
You know, every once in a while, you surprise even me with your your brilliance.
Okay, Bill, I will see you in about 2 short weeks then.
That is correct. And just can I say, anybody who is interested in coming to the Melba Lecture, they can make reservations by calling 508-833-2910.
Okay.
Very good.
Good enough. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Nice talking to you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, I have not been to that Heritage.
You got to go.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Manicured grounds, nice flowers. They even have an herb area if you want to go out and see herb. You want to go see herbs being grown, as a galloping gourmet would say. But yeah, it's a really nice place, and this Shaker Barn is real nice, and the cars are absolutely beautiful.
Now, how would you compare it? You know, last week we had Sue Mellon from the Brookline Museum of Transportation. How would you compare those two places?
Similar and different?
Oh, okay. Thank you. Well,
that
certainly made it clear.
That helped a lot, didn't it? It is a... They have a permanent exhibit that's going on at the Heritage Plantation. It's the same cars all the time. The cars may be in... The cars at Heritage are in beautifully kept shape. You get to walk around, look in them. They don't want you sitting in them, but you can get right up to them, get close to them. But it's sort of like going to, in a way, it's like going to Brookline, because part of the whole experience is the building it's in, the ground
right,
it's on.
Yeah.
And it's sort of similar that way. Part of what makes Brookline great is the lawn events that go on. So you have that as an advantage. And we also should say that there's still tickets available in Brookline for the big auction coming up in, I believe it's the 12th of November. So
we should say that.
There's a lot of car stuff going on over the next couple of weeks. But one of the things we should say is it's time to take a break. You're listening to Autoline here on News Talk 900 WMVU. We're still waiting to play Stump the
Experts.
Experts. We'll be right
back.
Thank
you, Dave.
To learn to read or to improve reading skills, get the best and easiest reading program on the market today, the Rush Reading Clinic videotape series. Why is Rush Reading the best? Simple. First, Rush is all on videotape, so it's just like having a reading teacher right there with you. Second, Rush goes way beyond teaching just phonics. Rush teaches reading for real life. Finally, the Rush Reading videos are designed specifically to work for all ages and all levels, so they're the only reading program you'll ever need. Best of all, you can try Rush Reading for free. That's right, order the program now, use it for 30 days, and if you're not delighted with the results, send it back and get a full refund for the program. Now, being a good reader is a must, so get the best. Order the Rush Reading videos right now by calling 1-800-RUSH-738. 1-800-RUSH-738. Rush Reading is easy. It works, and it's guaranteed. So try it risk-free. Right now, call 1-800-RUSH-738. 1-800-RUSH-738.
Corner at the Clarion Somerset Hotel is still the critic's choice for the best business lunch in the Nashua area. Prompt, professional service, and a relaxed atmosphere are the most often mentioned reasons for the continuing popularity of Speaker's Corner. The all-new menu features a wide variety of the most popular appetizers, soups, salads, daily specials, and sandwiches. Pasta night every Thursday evening from 5 to 9 and the Sunday Country Breakfast Buffet from 8 to noon offer all-you-can-eat portions for only $8.95. Certainly one of the best restaurant values available today. The Clarion Somerset Hotel is also home of the famous Chicago Steak Room, noted for elegant dining featuring steaks, seafood, and poultry dishes. Next time you're out, stop at the Clarion Somerset Hotel, the critic's choice, where the food and atmosphere is good every day of the week, not just Fridays. Take exit 8 off the Everett.
The excitement of New Hampshire High School football returns to 900 WMVU this Saturday as the Purple Panthers of Nashua travel to the capital city to take on the Crimson Tide of Concord. I'm Ed Leishis. Join me and Bob DeMello. Broadcast time 1:15 to kick off at 1:30. Brought to you by Tri-State Megabucks, Nashua Physical Therapy, the Nashua Athletic Club, NFS Savings and Loan, Hammer Hardware, all here on 900.
Thank you, John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
And our musical director, Jane Music Muccini. Yeah, it is. You probably didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, a couple of recalls, John. The 1995 Nissan Altima, the automatic transmission, neither one of these seem to be major, but I guess it's worth knowing. The automatic transmission shift lever lock can be damaged, allowing the lever or lever to be moved from the park position without the key in the ignition and the driver's foot on the brake pedal, which used to be able to do that on all cars before they had things like automatic transmission shift lever locks. Anyway, it only involves about 300 cars, and the dealers will repair the shift lock. Also, on the 1995 Eagle Talon Mitsubishi Eclipse, the newly redesigned Eagle Talon, I might add, which I think looks slick. Too bad it doesn't come in a T-top. The panel that supports the anti-lock...
And who did you want to... Who should I mail? Actually, you should continue with this, because the same PR agency that the Subaru... interview we'll get mailed to is the same PR agency
really?
For Eagle. So,
really? Well,
if you want to say that one more time.
It does look wonderful. They really should have considered a convertible or a T-top. The panel that supports the anti-lock brake hydraulic unit may not be strong enough and could crack. Dealers will install two additional support brackets on the panel. This involves about 1,500 talons, about 148 eclipses. The one thing they won't do is sell you an Eagle Talon or an Eclipse with a T-top or a convertible.
Not yet. But maybe after they hear your rather adamant
feeling that you'd like to...
they are slick-looking cars. Yeah, have you seen those driving around at all?
I had had...
You drove one.
I had the ability to take a Eagle Talon through the South Bronx by mistake.
And that was the 95 model?
95 Eagle Talon, 213 horsepower, all-wheel drive.
My recollection was you kind of liked it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
The guy from Chrysler didn't like the South Bronx, though.
Well, you know, to each his own, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are parts of the South Bronx that are nice.
Not the part we were in. In fact, there was a car that I believe was just probably from the door openings to the rear part of the trunk that I think was a 300ZX. But I'm not sure. But
it was just one that, time it there, might have
it,
been.
It had no nose. It had no trunk lid. It had no wheels suspension. And all it was, if I didn't know any better, I'd say someone left it there. But I actually think it was stripped a little at a time and got to that one last point.
So what we're talking about is a fixer-upper, huh?
A real fixer-upper. Electric vehicles, in fact, part of the talk I'm going to do with the Heritage Plantation is going to be about future technology. You know, where things may be going over the next couple of years. And electric vehicles, alternative fuel vehicles are some of the things that I'm going to be talking about. But Honda unveiled some EV test cars. American Honda Motor Company unveiled three electric vehicles last week that will serve a two-year test in Southern California Edison's fleet. Honda EV is based on a stretched skin of a Honda Civic with a battery pack slung underneath. The four-seater breaks no ground on EV technology. Its main mission is to test Honda's EV system before California's 1998 zero emissions mandate kicks in, if it in fact ever does. The car is powered by a 12-volt sealed lead-acid battery that serves a 50-kilowatt DC brushless motor. Equivalent horsepower is about 68. Honda estimates a range of 40 to 70 miles. So, nothing new, but again, it's another manufacturer.
Did I see that the auto manufacturers lost their lawsuit in New York? They were fighting that implementation of an electric vehicle mandate, and it looks like that might move forward.
I think I saw the same
thing. Yeah, I think I saw something in the news earlier this
week. But it wasn't... which I kind of expected. I didn't think they were going to win that anyway. Yeah. It's pretty tough to beat that, so... and the new Camry passes two out of three tests for 1997 California emissions. Toyota Motor Corporation would appear to be the front runner in the clean air technology battle, and its lead weapon appears to be the 94 Camry, strangely enough. The California Air Resources Board official reported last week that a stock 1994 Toyota Camry was tested nearly past all of California's ultra-low emissions rules, and they think only a little bit more work, and they can pass everything else. The only thing they missed was a hydrocarbon standard, and looks like that will be workable too. So maybe this 1997 rules are not so tough after all.
Or maybe.
Maybe they are.
Maybe they are. when they pass three out of three, then we'll know, huh?
Yeah, but they passed the tough ones, I think. So, in fact, one more thing about electric vehicles. It looks like the United States and Mexico will venture to set forth and build some electric vehicles in Mexico City. So electric vehicles being built everywhere. You know what that music means?
I think I hear music.
I thought I heard music too. And we didn't even give away any auto show tickets.
Well,
we have set fear in the life of our listening audience.
People were not able to stump the experts.
It's time to go though. As always, drive careful, wear your seatbelt, and be good to your car. See ya. Good morning, Nashua. Good morning, New England, and welcome to AutoLine here on News Talk 900 WMVU. My name's John Paul. The name of the program is AutoLine, and Dave Juvet, co-host extraordinaire, is out doing something else today. I don't know where he is today, but he's busy. That's all I know. So it's just me and you. So you're welcome to give us a call at 883-9900, and we'll talk about your car problems. And we have an interesting show planned for today. We have Sue Mead, she's a
automotive writer, and she's also the East Coast editor of something called American Woman Motor Scene. And we'll talk to her a little bit about what she's doing and her life in general, I guess. We'll also be talking to Mike Clement. He is from Chrysler Corporation, and he's their alternative fuels guy. We'll talk about alternative fuels and their vehicles and what they have to offer. They were in Boston this week, and they had an alternative fuel vehicle. We'll talk about that. And we have, as always, automotive updates and information. And we always want to take your phone calls at 883-9900. And you can give us a call. We'll try to maybe help you with your problems, whatever they are, and try to get through those. And not much time left, but if you're somewhere around the Museum of Transportation in Brookline, Saturday, July 30th, is the Gatsby Benefit Ball, and it's sponsored by Toyota. Relive the Roaring 20s at the Museum of Transportation. Tickets are still available, and you can call the Museum of Transportation, and they can send you some more information about that. The phone number at the museum is... Not right... here it is. 522-6547. Why don't we talk to Sue Mead, a new buddy for the Autoline Show. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who is Sue Mead?
Well,
keep in mind we only have an hour. So.
Okay. Well, why don't I tell you that I started about 15 years ago doing news work as a photojournalist and feature writer, and about 6 years ago had a contact that put me in a position to test drive four-wheel drive vehicles. And this was a new and exciting idea for me to have a voice in a whole arena that was not one I had thought about having a professional voice in before. So I started 6 years ago looking at sport utility vehicles, Jeeps and trucks, on an annual evaluation for Four Wheeler magazine. And some 6 years later, I'm now working for four magazines and have a nationally syndicated column and are also test driving a lot of on-road vehicles, have a new vehicle in my driveway almost every week now.
I'm jealous.
It's quite fun. It's going to be hard for me to go back into my own, although I do enjoy that. I drive a sport utility vehicle. But it's been very exciting to see how just getting a little toe in the water has opened up into a kind of blossoming career in this whole area. Currently, I would say about 80% of my work is out as an automotive journalist, and I'm considering heading towards full-time in this area. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity for women to have influence right now in all aspects, from purchasing to reviewing, and I'm really excited about that.
What percentage of women actually buy sport utility vehicles, and what percentage are influential in you know, that family decision?
Mm-hmm. In terms of sport utility vehicles, women are purchasing about a third of them, and these are the statistics from 1993,
mm-hmm.
about a third of the sport utilities purchased by women. And Chrysler is projecting that this year approximately 50% of the Grand Cherokees, which is their top-of-the-line sport utility vehicle, will be purchased by women. Which is really exciting, because I think that women are not only, in general, the statistics are that women are purchasing more than 50% of the cars sold today and are the decision makers for some 80% of vehicles sold. The only area that goes above that is minivans, and it's research shows that women are the decision makers for 90% of minivan sales. Truck sales right now, light truck sales to women, is about 25%. So a quarter of all light trucks sold last year were purchased by women.
I mean, that's interesting, because up until, I guess, the last few years, I mean, most all the trucks and sport utility vehicles and station wagons and sports cars and everything else were designed by men,
mm-hmm.
and having women be the major purchaser of them doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, that's I think that's right.
Yeah.
What's happened is that these statistics coincide with women in the workforce and the buying power that women have, not only as a force with purchasing power, but also some of the statistics that I've been noticing about primary business owners and women with incomes over $75,000 in the United States today. That's an ever-growing population.
Right.
So, and I also think that just as our culture has changed to have women being much more accepted in all kinds of roles, including driving heavy trucks, never mind light trucks, that women are more comfortable doing things like camping and going off-road alone and find a lot of usefulness for those kinds of vehicles. That's why I own that kind of vehicle myself. And I've been a single parent for a number of years, bringing up a daughter, and have taken her, the two of us have taken many trips in a sport utility vehicle and gone off-road and brought a canoe and brought tents. And it's not something that my mother would have done with me during my growing up years. So I think some of it is a reflection of that.
Yeah. Now, we were talking a week or so ago, we were talking about some of the design that goes into cars and trucks today, mm-hmm. and how finally, you know, a light bulb went on somewhere and said, you know, gee, maybe we should have women here in the design team. And you were talking about, what was it, Ford or something? Some of the male designers were gluing fingernails on?
That's right. That's right. And you were actually asking me about the specifics about design. As women started to purchase more vehicles, including women in engineering aspects of, pre-production and design, was lagging behind. But the three major car makers in the United States, as well as many other car makers, European car makers specifically, have women's focus groups and women's marketing councils, and many women involved from start to finish on a product. And what I'm learning is not only are there women within the industry that are making decisions, but in the pre-planning and early stages, many automakers today are going out on the road and doing focus groups and asking women what they're looking for, and having everyday women who are going to be driving these vehicles helping to make decisions. In terms of design, the ergonomics, I think that women have been particularly responsible for more comfortable seats, lumbar features, and also safety features. When the research right now says that when women, the first influence for a woman in purchasing a vehicle is its safety features, and that for men, that comes second. It's also very important. Interestingly, for couples, safety is number one. But so for women, things like anti-lock brake systems, airbags, side beams, keyless entry is a really big one. I know that many women that I speak with feel that their ability to open up a vehicle walking across a parking lot is a very important safety feature. One of the things that I appreciated about the new Ford Windstar was that there was a latch. There is a latch inside the rear hatch that allows the doors to be opened. So as soon as you open up the tail gate, you can open up the other doors. And again, I think that's a safety issue.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. And I know some of the other safety factors. My own car has central unlocking, but it unlocks all four doors,
mm-hmm.
which is not the brightest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be nice to just unlock the door you're going to go in. And I know, I think it was Toyota, one of the first ones that said, male or female going to the car, it's mm-hmm. a lot safer to be able to just get in the door you want to get in rather than have all four doors open and have someone else jump in the other side of the car.
Exactly.
And I know that was a comment that came through one of the focus groups that Toyota used.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Sue, we need to take.
The other thing I was going to mention was seatbelts, and again, just some of the ergonomic features of reaching controls. But seatbelts, as you know, some manufacturers are paying particular attention to the way a seatbelt goes across chests, and because women and men are not designed exactly the same, some seatbelts now are able to accommodate women in a way that is much more comfortable. And also, when you mentioned the fingernails, we learned a few years ago that controls were being manipulated in a pre-production stage by men who didn't have fingernails, and now they are much more extended and much more easy to manipulate for those kinds of reasons.
Well, you know, even that, being in New England, long fingernails or not, you know, if you drive with gloves on,
that's right.
4 or 5 years ago, you couldn't change a radio station on a lot of different cars because the buttons were so tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a little bit of thought sometimes can go a long way. We do need to take a break. When we come back from the break, can we talk about maybe a little bit of your picks about favorite sport utility vehicles?
Okay,
and
great.
A little bit about the Tread Lightly program?
Sure.
All right, great. We're talking with Sue Mead. I don't have a good title for you. You're East Coast editor of American Woman Motor Scene.
I'd love to talk about that for a moment, too.
Yeah, and okay. Automotive journalist.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Is that okay?
That's perfect.
Is that a good title? Okay. And my name's John Paul. This is AutoLine, and we'll be right back.
Excuse me. Would you mind a brief interruption here? 60 seconds of straight talk from Sunnyside Actra. Have you ever thought about the word guarantee and what it means? Guarantee, a promise, a powerful stand behind it, back it up no matter what promise that what you say is true. Now listen to this. Sunnyside Acura is so sure that you'll be completely satisfied with the way we do business that we make this guarantee. Buy any new Acura at Sunnyside Acura, and if we can't satisfy you, return it. Just bring it back for any reason, in the same condition, within 10 days or 500 miles, whichever comes first, and get a full refund. All your money back. No questions asked. The same guarantee goes for used cars as well, within 2 days or 200 miles. And Sunnyside Acura's service is backed up with a guarantee unparalleled anywhere else. At Sunnyside Acura, the word guarantee really means something. For further details, come to Sunnyside Acura, the Happy Face Place, Route 101A, Nashua.
At Sunnyside Acura, your satisfaction is guaranteed, no questions asked. Sunnyside Acura, the Happy Face Place, Route 101 in Nashua.
What's the difference between an exciting new phone from Radio Shack and your boring old phone? Let's listen.
Hello, Doris. Murray.
Hello.
Got my dry cleaning back.
Shirts and slacks.
Now, one of our exciting new phones.
Hello, Doris. Murray.
Hello.
Got my dry cleaning back.
Whoa, shirts and slacks.
Uh-huh.
What a great new phone. At Radio Shack, we've got over 65 phones, from fashion phones to cellular phones. And now they're all 20% off. Radio Shack. You've got questions, we've got answers.
To learn to read or to improve reading skills, get the best and easiest reading program on the market today, the Rush Reading Clinic videotape series. Why is Rush Reading the best? Simple. First, Rush is all on videotape, so it's just like having a reading teacher right there with you. Second, Rush goes way beyond teaching just phonics. Rush teaches reading for real life. Finally, the Rush Reading videos are designed specifically to work for all ages and all levels, so they're the only reading program you'll ever need. Best of all, you can try Rush Reading for free. That's right, order the program now, use it for 30 days, and if you're not delighted with the results, send it back and get a full refund for the program. Now, being a good reader is a must, so get the best. Order the Rush Reading videos right now by calling 1-800-RUSH-738. 1-800-RUSH-738. Rush Reading is easy. It works, and it's guaranteed. So try it risk-free. Right now, call 1-800-RUSH-738. 1-800-RUSH-738.
And we're back. You're listening to AutoLine here on News Talk 900 WMVU. I'm still John Paul, and Dave Gervais is still missing. So we don't know where he is, but he'll be back. He'll be back next week in his same old lively position. Sure he will. Brad Nelson says sure he will. Before we went away to the break, we were talking about Sue Mead, and we promised that we'd come back and Sue, if I was going to go out and buy a sport utility vehicle, and I had, say, a, I don't know, $25,000 budget,
mm-hmm.
is there something I could go out and buy that I'd be comfortable and be able to do a little, maybe just some light off-roading, but just to be comfortable in New England?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a question that I get asked a lot, and as a matter of fact, it's a question, as I've gone out and evaluated vehicles, I probably have driven some 60 to 80 new vehicles coming onto the sport utility drive market, or vehicles that have been existing vehicles with significant changes, and I've wondered each year, what would I bring home if I could bring one home? So I think about that a lot. And the $25,000 range is pretty middle of the road. There are a number of vehicles in that price range. But what I would ask you first is, what are you going to use it for? What is your primary use for that vehicle? And many folks today are buying sport utilities, particularly in the Northeast Corridor, from Boston to New York to Philly to Baltimore and Washington. Sales are very high in that price range of vehicles like the Grand Cherokee and the Ford Explorer and Chevy Blazer and mm-hmm. Ford Bronco. But what a lot of folks are buying those vehicles as primary family vehicles or vehicles to commute to work in and not to take them off-road. And so I would ask you, what are your personal needs for this vehicle? And that might influence whether many and most vehicles that are four-wheel drive vehicles come prepared with their four-wheel drive, are able to go on most four-wheel drive trails. But for instance, some manufacturers have packages that increase that vehicle's ability to be off-road safely, for instance, with skid plates or with tow hooks or with a particular size tire. I would also ask you if you are going to be towing anything. Some folks buy a sport utility to tow a boat or to tow a mobile home.
And some people buy them just to be yuppies, right?
Lots of people buy them to be yuppies. They certainly are, in general, the yuppie vehicle.
I mean, you go into Cambridge, and there's an awful lot of Jeeps and Ford Explorers and Range Rovers. And
mm-hmm.
Realistically, it never snows in Cambridge. You know, there's enough traffic and enough people where you either don't go out or the roads are clear, you know, mm-hmm. but there's an awful lot of people that just buy them because I guess part of the success of the sport utility market right now is they've just become very popular and they're a little bit of status symbols, aren't they?
I agree. Absolutely. And I think that they're communicating an image, the ways that they're being advertised, and I think the way people feel when they're driving them is an image that's been put out. Likewise with Jeeps, which Jeeps and light trucks are part of that market, and they create, they have an image as well. The Suzuki and Sidekick and the Jeep Wrangler, Geo Tracker, those vehicles are looked at and often considered cute and fun, and they are. And some of those vehicles do a nice job off-road. And again, I would say to someone, are you looking to have a yuppie vehicle and drive around Cambridge and feel like you have a vehicle with weight and the capability to have four-wheel drive? Are you looking for something that you might want to sleep in the back of or carry a lot of gear or put a canoe on top of? So, there's a really wide range. And then there is the upper end, which includes the Range Rover and the Land Cruiser. Those kinds of vehicles are above the $25,000 mark.
Way above.
And they are. And they're tremendously fun to drive, and they have lots of wonderful features. But there are many good vehicles to be had, probably in that low 20 to upper 20 range.
Yeah, I know. I've road tested a few here and there, and I've always enjoyed them. And I know there's also some people out there who feel that to be as safe as you can be, the only way to do that is being something that's all-wheel or four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have the best brakes available, the best traction system available. you know, airbags and whatever. You know, that's, you know, why compromise with your own safety? Go out and buy as much safety as you can and surround yourself with it, I mm-hmm. guess, is one theory there, too. Like you said, there's a big range of four-wheel drive vehicles. You know, like you said, the Geo Tracker and the Suzuki Sidekick, and all the way up to the Range Rovers and Land Cruisers that are up in the, you know, $40,000+ range.
Mm-hmm.
Down at the bottom of the lineup there, the Geo Tracker, the couple of times I've driven that, wasn't a bad little four-wheel drive vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of it?
Well, the last time that I was in a Geo Tracker was a couple of years ago, and I was when I do this test drive with the magazine, we spend a week in these vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and it's a pretty rigorous evaluation, which starts out in Los Angeles, and so the rigor there is maneuvering through the Cloverleaf highway system.
Mm-hmm.
We then go to Death Valley and navigate, believe it or not, some significant hills. People think of Death Valley as being pretty flat, and it is in its center. But there's some good mountain roads. Mm.
I can see where that vehicle, because of limited engine power,
mm-hmm.
may have been a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's where I was a little disappointed in the Tracker. It's not a vehicle with a lot of power. It's a vehicle that I think is sort of, it's cute and fun, and certainly can go off-road. It was fun to take in the dunes. In Death Valley, we also go on dry washboard, which is a very hard, bumpy surface, to look at suspension and tires and handling. And then we go into this wonderful, squishy, soft sand dunes. And the Tracker was really fun there, and we air the tires down and get better traction. And it was a really fun vehicle to have there. But coming in and out of the mountains, it doesn't have a lot of power. And I found the same thing. That's a good evaluation
mm-hmm.
of some other vehicles. But again, I would say, what are your needs for this particular vehicle? And what are your interests in? What is your pocketbook going to allow?
Yeah, I suppose if you just wanted a beach vehicle and, you know, maybe something to put a windsurfer on top of at times, and you're not going out, you know, real serious off-roading. And again, that vehicle has definitely got the market cornered on cute.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it also, I'll just mention sort of similarly, another vehicle which is an upscale model of the Geo is the Land Rover Defender 90. And that vehicle has incredibly tough, its engine is very powerful, and it's a very strong off-road vehicle. As a matter of fact, it might be the, I would say to date, it's the best off-road vehicle that I've been in. However,
including a Humvee?
Well, I haven't been in a Humvee.
Oh.
It's on my list. It's one of the things I want to do, is if you can find out a way for me to get a Humvee soon. I don't know if it would fit in my driveway, but that's on my list.
Yeah, only if your driveway is like 8.5 feet wide.
I'm thinking of trying to arrange that for an Alaska trip. I know there is a Humvee dealer in Anchorage, and I've done some off-roading there, and I thought that would be an ideal location to get out into the tundra with one. But the Land Rover is a wonderful off-road vehicle, but I certainly wouldn't want to drive it for very long on the highway. It's not comfortable, whereas the Geo, just to bop around town and maybe to drive from here to Boston and back would be fine. So, again, what I'm learning about vehicles is that it's hard to find the perfect vehicle, but you can certainly, when you add what you can spend, put together a number of important features and probably come up with something that meets most of your needs.
Yeah. When you were talking a little bit ago about squishing around in the soft sand,
mm-hmm.
that made me think about the Tread Lightly program.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just tell our listeners what that's all about?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because the Tread Lightly program is endorsed by all of the off-road magazines that I work for, all of the four-wheel drive clubs that I participate in events with, and I've actually been quite impressed with the impact that this program has had on the whole four-wheel drive market and manufacturers as well. Particularly the Jeep Jamboree program often advertise hand-in-hand with Tread Lightly. Tread Lightly is a program that comes out of the Department of the Interior, Bureau of Land Management, and it's an educational program that supports keeping our off-road, and actually their terminology is off-highway, because the connotation is very different. The implication sometimes with off-roading is that, in fact, people are going off a trail, and Tread Lightly asks us to never go off a trail, but to talk about our driving as being off-highway. And I think just that concept alone really helps individuals focus on how we should be driving thoughtfully. It also goes beyond that. For most people that I know, it includes not only not leaving trash behind and being thoughtful about the environment, but also helping clean it up. And one of the things that I've been particularly impressed by, I've been spending time with New England four-wheel drive clubs as well as clubs throughout the country, but I'm finding that many of the clubs do clean up of the woods, of the off-road trails, and some areas do beach cleanup, just to kind of work to support the environment, but also to work against the stigma of off-roading, which certainly some folks have.
Yeah.
Evan Sunoco features driveline and clutch work too. And I'll bet something you've not seen for a long time, free air for your tires. Evan Sunoco also does small engine work on lawnmowers, snowblowers, chainsaws like tune-ups, and engine work by a pro with over 20 years' experience. Evan Sunoco also specializes in hand control work on cars for the handicapped. If you know someone who could benefit from special hand controls, let them know about Evan Sunoco. Exit 5 North off Route 3 and Main Dunstable Road in Nashua near Howard Johnson's. Chris Evans at your service at Evan Sunoco next to Howard Johnson's, Exit 5 North, Nashua.
I like the trucks. Mom liked the mattresses.
It's Sears Truckload Mattress Bonanza, with truckloads of Sealy, Simmons, and Spring Air mattresses of every size priced to move.
Big trucks, big mattresses, little mattresses.
Sealy Posture Luxury and Spring Air Classic mattresses start at $88.88 per twin-size piece. A queen-size set is only $348.88.
It's a great place if you like mattresses or trucks.
Sears Truckload Mattress Bonanza ends Saturday at Sears Home Life Furniture and some Sears stores. Contact store for availability.
If you need a tough truck now, here's the deal you've been waiting for. Milford Ford can lease a new 94 Ford F-150 real tough truck for just $233.96 a month for only 24 months. Incredible savings on America's favorite truck, a 94 Ford F-150 with sliding rear window, stereo with cassette, step bumper, headliner, cloth seats, Argent wheels, and manual transmission. The price, $233.96 a month for 24 months. Super savings on America's favorite truck, the Ford F-150. $233.96 a month reflects $1,500 cash or trade with approved credit from Ford Motor Credit Company. Total payments, $56,1504. Purchase price, $88,2167. 15,000 miles per year, first payment and security deposit due at lease inception. Lease a new 94 Ford Tough F-150 with the options you want most. Just $233.96 a month for only 24 months at Milford Ford, Mount Vernon Street, Route 13 in Milford, New Hampshire. Milford Ford. Call 673-1700 for details.
And we're back. Sort of a surprise, too. We just all of a sudden came back. What kind of do the last month or so, we've been doing sort of the WMVU Autoline Car of the Week, and we have another one here. The last weekend, I had the opportunity to go up to Stratton Mountain, Vermont, for the first annual Vintage Saab Convention. There's a lot of neat old Saabs there, things from the 50s and 60s, and got to meet a lot of interesting people. Got to meet some strange people, too, but got to meet some interesting people. But at the same time, there was some new Saabs there, and I had the opportunity to drive the 1995 Saab 900 convertible, powered by a 2.2-liter, 220-horsepower turbocharged four-cylinder engine. List of likes on the car, you could say, is convertible top operation, unhook two latches, one switch, the top goes up, the cover goes up, everything stows in the back, and you still get really good trunk space. Seats were very comfortable. There was a good-sized glove box, good control layout. The shifter had nice short throws and a positive feel to it. The brakes were great. Ride was very smooth and steady with little cowl shake, and cowl shake is when you go over a bump sometimes in a convertible, the whole car feels like it's shaking and jittering a little bit, and it didn't seem to have any of that. The engine performed best above 3,000 RPM, especially in the Vermont mountains. Speaking of convertibles, last night on Chronicle Magazine on television, you could have seen me. Apparently, I was on an interview on Chronicle Magazine about talking about convertibles last night. Some of the dislikes, if I could pick on Saab just a little bit, with the top up, very limited, or it appears to be limited visibility through the rear windows. The back seat had headrests on them, and with the headrests in place, it blocked that vision through the rear window. Seemed a little annoying more than actual visibility problems. No cup holders for the front seat, but the rear passengers do get to share one cup holder. So I guess they all have to get like a big gulp and a couple of straws. There was a little bit of wheel well intrusion on the passenger side. You put your feet down, and it was a little cramped feeling over there. There was no dead pedal for your left foot, but not too bad all in all. Judging by comments about that we received while we were driving the car, in fact, my wife Joanne was with us. Well, I suppose. And we were out driving around, and we stopped, and she wanted to drive back. And we stopped, and a guy in a pickup truck zipped over behind us and said, that car, is that out on the market yet? That's great. Oh, I love that car. And he wanted to know where he could buy one. So if that's any of the comments about how this new Saab convertible will sell, it sounds like it'd be pretty interesting. If you're looking for a front-wheel drive sporty convertible that you can have a conversation at highway speeds, this Saab may be something for you. Brad just spun the computer around and says he was a plant. Could have been a vegetable. I don't know. No, he wasn't a plant. He was somebody who just saw the car and thought it was really interesting, and I thought it was really interesting too. It was a nice car, and it was a fun time, and I want to thank the folks at Saab for inviting me up to that. It was a good time, and maybe.